This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, I know we were both very impressed last week with our guest, Congressman Gao. His life journey was quite remarkable, coming to America as a young child at the height of the Vietnam conflict.
And growing up to defeat the Democratic incumbent in the city of New Orleans, the most Democratic district in America.
While he's only 42, he's really accomplished so much.
And he hasn't been in lockstep with the Republicans on many issues. He was one of seven to vote to censure Representative Joe Wilson for his outburst against the president during the State of the Union address.
And he made headline news everywhere as the lone Republican to vote in favor of the Affordable Health Care Act for America on November 7th. He's differentiating himself and attracting lots of attention. It's hard to believe that he was only sworn into office in January of this year.
We heard from many listeners about our interview, but the sentiments were best captured by Dr. Manohar, president of the Asian American Caucus of the American Psychiatric Association. It was worthy of inclusion in a new edition of Profiles in Courage.
We couldn't agree more. And we'll be keeping a close eye on Congressman Gao.
Now, let's take a moment and reflect on that historic House vote for health care reform. Charlie Cook, the political analyst, had a piece in his weekly blog, and he said, no matter how you view the vote, you have to give credit to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel.
Yes, he made the observation that few of Pelosi's detractors understand that behind her big smile and stylish looks is a Baltimore-bred pal who is tough as nails and knows which veteran blue dog can ultimately be persuaded to vote her way on any given piece of legislation.
She is tenacious, and credit also goes to Rahm Emanuel. It's not just that he has the all-powerful chief of staff position. More importantly, he was chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and helped to get many of the House members elected, and he still knows their districts. That's a very important part of the puzzle when you're asking members to take votes that will have an impact on their reelection.
But the chess match moves back to Senator Harry Reid, and he is contemplating his next move. He's awaiting that all-important financial scorecard of his proposed legislation from the Congressional Budget Office.
The role of the CBO looms large. As the budget deficit increases, their scoring is all the more critical as public mood seems to be shifting to controlling spending. Reid's going to have to thread the eye of the needle, and time is working against them.
It might be, but there are many within the Democratic Party saying that if we want to win in 2010, they'll need to get things accomplished this year.
Right. And we saw the former president, Bill Clinton, talking behind closed doors to Democratic senators, reminding them they lost control of the House in 94. He believes they lost in part because they failed to get health care reform done in that first term.
But they have to worry about the filibuster in the Senate. And without the consent of 60 senators, a supermajority of the chamber, any senator can object by filibustering to halt a bill. With Republicans nearly lockstep in their opposition to the largely Democratic health care reform bill Senator Reid is crafting, the majority leader needs every vote at his disposal from his 60-senator caucus.
Mark, I think most Americans would be surprised to know that the first big hurdle is that Senator Reid needs to get the Senate to agree to debate the bill. It's called a motion to proceed, and that vote hopefully will be coming up this week. Conversations on health care will keep you informed.
And now we turn our attention to this week's topic, the free clinic movement, which was in the news this weekend when thousands turned out for a free clinic in New Orleans. Just another example of the growing population of uninsured Americans.
This week, we interview the executive director of the National Association of Free Clinics, Nicole Lamoureux.
Founded in 2001 and headquartered in Washington, D.C., the National Association is an advocate for the issues and concerns of free clinics.
Mark, this must seem like deja vu to you. In your younger days, weren't you involved in the formation of an earlier free clinic association?
It's still a vivid memory. It was January 1972. A group of free clinics from around the country convened in Washington, D.C. The most well-known of them was the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic from San Francisco. But there were free clinics that identified with all of the forces that were on the rise within our society. Women's clinics, farm workers, the Black Panther Party, and groups like our own from Middletown, Connecticut, where a group of Wesleyan University students and Middletown community activists came together in 1971 to start a free clinic. We came with no financial resources, but a shared, larger vision that healthcare is a right and not a privilege. The time had come for people to demand a voice in their own healthcare.
Let me read a section from a book, The Story of the American Free Clinic Movement by Greg Weiss. It sets the stage for the struggle that you and everyone else faced. He writes, imagine what it would have been like to create a free clinic in the late 1960s and early 70s. You recognize that there's a significant problem in the country and that many young people feel unable to access or to trust the private healthcare system, or you recognize that many members of racial or ethnic minority groups are unable to afford or find accessible primary care in their community. Perhaps you have one or two allies or a small group of activists who share your belief that this is wrong, and you all want to do something about it. You conclude, yes, you lack the power to change the entire system, but you think it might be feasible to create small cases within communities to provide care to those left out of the private system. You are committed to the idea. You are passionate about it. But to start with, there's no money, no location for the clinic, no equipment, and no providers. Perhaps just as importantly, no models to emulate, no one with experience or expertise to offer guidance, no manuals or literature on the subject. What a daunting task.
Right on, George. He's right. We were a passionate group, but we were also optimistic. We believed that whatever we did, we would be successful at because the need was so great. It's clear that out of those early days, you can hear the voices, few in number, that are laying the groundwork that is now being heard in the nation's capital around reform.
And we'll hear more about that in our free clinic story later in the show.
No matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Download the podcast or get transcripts of our show, and we have some interesting links on the folks we interview.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at conversations@chc1.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Now let's hear a background report from Margaret on free clinics.
The notion of providing charity care has been with us almost as long as organized medicine. America has a tradition of healthcare services organized for the poor that have ranged from public health clinics to the hospital dispensaries that also served as training sites for young physicians. Religious orders have often made healthcare their focus, and of course, providers have often quietly provided free care to their own patients as they fell on hard economic times. The modern notion of what we now call free clinics represents something different, not just free care in terms of dollars, but also what Dr. David Smith describes as free of red tape, free of bureaucracy, free of judgment.
First went to the city, and then the city said, well, you can't have a clinic for hippies. So this was an old dentist's office, and it was licensed properly, and I said, well, the city won't let us. We started feeling ourselves as outlaws, civil rights, doctors trying to take care of the poor. Police were against us, government was against us, so we had to do it on our own.
Dr. Smith is considered the founder of the modern free clinic movement. A young physician who was also studying pharmacology and toxicology in San Francisco during the 1967 Summer of Love, he was a firsthand witness to the explosion of young people who moved into Haight-Ashbury and not infrequently ran into health problems. 40 years later, Dr. Smith talks about why he started the free clinics and what it represents.
And deal with the acute medical problems. We're operating 24 hours a day. It's about 100 volunteers. There was a line around the street of people that found out about the clinic because we were the community's clinic.
Free clinics quickly spread to other California cities and to the rest of the United States. In 1972, a meeting was held at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., where organizers and staff from all over the country gathered to listen to speakers, including Dr. Smith. It was at this meeting that the slogan, "Healthcare is a right and not a privilege," emerged as a central theme for the free clinic movement. Over the next 20 years, individual communities continued to establish free clinics. While some survived, the lack of any reliable funding made long-term success iffy at best. And over time, many transformed from the original free clinic model into clinics with sliding fee schedules and the ability to bill insurance. Others took the path of becoming community health centers, later federally qualified health centers. This allowed clinics to receive some federal grant funds and to bill Medicaid and other payers, but it also meant a much more traditional organized approach to healthcare than that envisioned by Dr. Smith. But the free clinic movement never faded from the scene. Driven by the commitment to volunteer staff and an open-door policy for patients, the National Association of Free Clinics, the successor organization to that one founded in 1972, says that there are now 1,200 free clinics operating in America. They are defined as private, nonprofit, community-based organizations that provide free medical care, sometimes dental and behavioral health care as well, at little or no cost to low-income, uninsured, and underinsured people. They accomplish this through the use of volunteer health professionals and community volunteers, along with partnership with other health care providers. And they range from small storefronts to multi-million-dollar organizations. Free clinics have caught the attention of the media recently, in part because of their sponsorship of large large public free clinic events held in cities around the country. MSNBC's Keith Oberman was so impressed by the Houston Free Clinic event that he announced on his show he was contributing $50,000 to the cause. And he was not shy about making the connection between the sight of hundreds of Americans needing to line up for free health care and the current health reform debate.
In doing so, we can get us closer to health care for all, but we can also support an organization that stages some of these fairs in cities where they can do not just medical good, humanitarian good, but, as a sidebar, political good for the entire nation. Specifically, if these fairs were to occur in states represented by those Democratic senators, like leader Harry Reid, not yet committed to opposing a Republican filibuster of the public option, to ensuring that the public option gets an up or down vote, so they can see for themselves what is at stake, the faces of Americans, their constituents, who need their help.
Just a few days ago, and exactly 1 week after the House of Representatives passed H.R. 3962, the health reform bill designed to create universal insurance coverage and access to affordable health care for all Americans, the city of New Orleans was the site of a massive free clinic, Day of Care. As in Houston, hundreds lined up in advance, this time at the site of the New Orleans Convention Center, to see one of 720 volunteer physicians, nurses, and health care workers that day.
And Louisiana is a place to shine a spotlight because 869,000 people in this state do not have insurance, and fully more than one out of every four of the non-elderly adults don't have insurance. We're looking at 500,000 people who work in this state who do not have insurance.
Who sponsors free clinics? It's all over the map. AmeriCares, a Connecticut-based nonprofit organization best known for its relief efforts during natural disasters around the globe, also sponsors three free clinics right here in Connecticut, often noted as the wealthiest state in the country. Many free clinics are organized by university schools of medicine and nursing, such as the Echo Free Clinic in the Bronx or the University of Kentucky's Salvation Army Clinic. Across the country, state dental associations have teamed up to sponsor huge missions of mercy for dental care, setting up hundreds of dental operatories and school auditoriums, recruiting local dentists and hygienists, and providing a full range of dental care to up to 2,000 people in a single weekend. A logical question is, will free clinics still be needed if national health reform passes? That question will be answered in the coming years. But for now, free clinics appear to continue to deliver on what Dr. Smith envisioned, not just free in dollars, but free of bureaucracy, red tape, and judgment. We'll learn more about free clinics in America from Nicole Lamoureux, Executive Director of the National Association of Free Clinics.
Welcome, Nicole, to Conversations on Healthcare. You're the director of the National Association of Free Clinics. Sounds like equal parts healthcare, community organizing, and service. It's probably an organization that most of our listeners aren't so familiar with. Tell us about your members, who they are, and what the goal of the association is.
Sure. Thank you again so much for having me. The National Association of Free Clinics is comprised of 1,200 free clinics across the United States. And free clinics are 501c3 organizations, volunteer healthcare organizations. And we provide quality healthcare to the nation's uninsured, those living 100 to 300% below the poverty level. They have no insurance, so we also don't accept any state or federal funds, and 83% of our patients have a job, so uninsured does not equal unemployed. And our clinics in 2008 serviced 4 million patients. In 2009, we will service 8 million patients, and we do that with 6 million volunteers.
Nicole, the free clinics have such an interesting past, but what do you think about the future? We know you and your members must be following the healthcare reform debate very closely, and to the best of my knowledge, there's no specific mention of the free clinics in the health reform bills that we've seen so far. So what do you see for the future? If health reform does come to pass, will the free clinics still be needed?
We will still be needed. I think that what we're finding, you're correct, we were not in the stimulus package, nor are free clinics included in, definitely not in the health bill and the House health bill. So we're hoping that in the Senate, there will be some mention of free clinics. For many of the uninsured in this country, the free clinics are their medical home. So what we're trying to educate and work with Congress about is saying that by taking little to no state or federal funds, this is a home and a place that patients can go. But even if healthcare reform goes through. We do know it's going to take some time to implement the program. We also know that by 2019, by Congress's own estimation, there still will be 25 million uninsured, and that's based on a zero population growth. So we do know that there will still be a need. There's always going to be a place for some person that unfortunately falls through the cracks.
Very good observation. Nicole, as we speak, we understand you're traveling from New Orleans to Little Rock. And in New Orleans, the National Association sponsored a one-day free clinic attended by over 1,000 New Orleaners. One news report said that 90% of the people who came left with a diagnosis they hadn't previously had, either blood pressure or diabetes being two of the most common. These are chronic conditions that need follow-up. What do you say to people after they get this diagnosis of how to manage their health care?
One of the things that's so very, very important to the National Association of Free Clinics is what we spoke about at the beginning when we started talking. There are 1,200 clinics that are doing this every single day across the United States. So these big clinics that we are a part of, we did one in Houston in September, this one in New Orleans, and now what we're doing in Little Rock, just highlights what free clinics do every day. What's so critical to us, however, is the one-day free clinics get people started on the first path to health. But when every single patient leaves our clinic, they receive resources for those follow-up care, either appointments or information on how to get appointments at one of the safety net providers in their state.
Nicole, the free clinics certainly tap into a deep spirit of volunteerism in a community. And I've noticed many seem to be run by faith-based organizations, also quite a few sponsored by students, especially health profession students at universities. As you know, healthcare can be pretty complex. We'd like to hear how you deal with issues like malpractice, accreditation, standards of care, when this is a voluntary part-time job, not a full-time commitment for most of the staff.
Well, I think those are great questions for us. First and foremost, I think, again, we've been doing this since the 1960s. And the one thing that I think is the beauty of the free clinic movement is that we are the community's response to the healthcare need in that area. So, for example, in Biloxi, Mississippi, we had a clinic open right after Hurricane Katrina, and they understood that respiratory issues were going to be their number one issue. So they worked with their community, and now they're a full-scale clinic. Some of the things that we talk about is there under the Federal Torts Claim Act, our volunteers are covered under the Federal Torts Claim Act for malpractice, and we are hoping that that will change and that our site and our staff, so the actual building and the people, if we have someone paid, that they can get covered as well. But that is how we're covered for malpractice. But even more so, the amazing part of this is many of our physicians extend their own coverage to themselves, to the places where they're volunteering. We obviously work with HIPAA and OSHA and all of the other things that are requirements for a medical provider. That's what we do. And our standards of care, since we're dealing with some of the world's leading specialists, and we have a board that works with us, many of us work with hospitals, and the National Association of Free Clinics has guidelines for each of our clinics when they get started as well.
Nicole, free clinics may be the best example of community organizing in healthcare that we have. Tell us what you see is critical to the success at the community level for your clinic members. And if there's one of our listeners out there who wants to start a free clinic or wants you to come to their community, what should they do?
Well, first and foremost, if you'd like information on how to start a free clinic in your area, because again, as we talked about before, these one-day clinics are just the start of getting people healthy. It's the existing structures that are there every single day that make a difference in their lives. On our website, freeclinics.us, under resource publications, there is a way to start either how you can start a free clinic or a free dental clinic. And that success is making sure you read those documents, because they give you some step-by-step ways to go about working with your communities, your hospitals, even getting some donors to come and help you. And then obviously you call me and we help you get connected with your state association, or we have some wonderful board members that help travel to help start free clinics when we have the opportunity.
Nicole, that's spoken like a true community organizer. Let me ask you this. A patient comes to one of the free clinics and then needs care at the emergency emergency room or in another practice in town. It seems like free clinics would benefit from electronic health records even more than most doctors' offices, given the need to transfer health information and coordinate care. Can you tell us what the free clinics are doing in that arena? Do you have any plans or anticipate any support under the stimulus funds for electronic health records for free clinics?
We received zero funds under the stimulus package for electronic health records, and you are correct. We understand that electronic health records are critical to the health of our patients because we have so many partnerships. Do you know that for every dollar given to a free clinic, we can make $5 worth of services given to our patients because of the wonderful relationships we have? Electronic medical records are very, very expensive, quite frankly. 44% of free clinics have an operating budget under $100,000. So having some funds to help us have electronic medical records is critical. But free clinics can't wait for a stimulus package or some money like that. So many of them are raising funds right now or working with their hospitals to have those electronic medical records in-house. We know that they're critical. We understand that they're important, and we will be moving to that direction. That is the goal of the organization. Unfortunately, it just takes a little bit of funds to get that going. So we're finding creative ways to raise money for electronic medical records in-house.
Nicole, one of the biggest free clinics that we've seen here in the Northeast are the dental free clinics sponsored by the Mission of Mercy. At their last clinic, we saw the all-too-familiar scene where thousands of people line up overnight waiting to be seen by voluntary dental teams. Although it's not talked about as much, people face even worse trouble getting dental care than medical. And it doesn't look like that will be addressed initially under health reform. Tell us what the National Association of Free Clinics is doing in the area of dental care.
Well, our free clinics have, many of them have dental care. They have vision care as well. In Kansas City, Missouri, when we're going there for our one day, well, it'll be a two-day clinic, actually, December 9th and 10th, we actually will be having dental care on site in Kansas City, Missouri. As you know, if your teeth aren't healthy, then that just is a really pointer to the rest of your health as well. Many of our clinics have dental. We either partner with a dental school or we have it right in-house. It's something that we are talking about. Under the health reform legislation, we do know that there are some things that are not addressed, and free clinics are looking at how do we expand our services in a way to address things like dental and the mental health component, which is very, very important. How do we help make sure that we're answering the needs of the patients after a health care reform bill goes through, because it's not just an access to an insurance card that's important, but rather it's access to that quality care. It's that time with the doctor and the dentist that can help you get healthy that we're really looking forward. We're a nonpartisan organization. We just know that they have 8 million people right now that come to us for medical care, and we want to make sure that they're seen.
We've been speaking with Nicole Lamoureux, the director of the National Association of Free Clinics. Nicole, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on improving communication between doctors and patients, but with a new twist, the internet. Incorporating virtual communication into healthcare can simplify the process for both providers and patients. Many doctors have begun to use online applications to facilitate better communication. One such website is HelloHealth.com, which connects physicians and patients through email, instant messaging, and video chatting. Using this technology, doctors can follow up with patients after appointments, verify treatment plans, and even share links to helpful websites. Instead of waiting on hold, patients can instant message specific questions to their doctors and receive timely replies. Rather than stopping by their doctor's office to pick up particular health records, patients can submit online requests and receive these documents as email attachments. And whether they're out of town or unable to drive, patients who can't get to their doctor's office in person can easily have a face-to-face conference by video chatting. Another company eager to use the internet to bridge the gap between patients and physicians is the Mayo Clinic. On its website, the Mayo Clinic has posted helpful guidelines for patients thinking about using this technology. Patients are urged to go over the specifics of the technology their physicians use before jumping right in. Some physicians ask patients to sign a release form, which details the security measures in place to keep health information confidential. In addition to learning about these protections, the site recommends that people keep their online messages concise to ensure that their doctors have time to respond effectively. The Mayo Clinic also reminds people of the limits of this internet technology, telling them to seek traditional, immediate care for severe problems like chest pain, rather than sending their doctor an email. Increased access to their physician gives patients peace of mind. It makes good economic sense, too. By eliminating the gap between physicians and patients, programs like Hello Health reduce the need for costly middlemen like receptionists and other administrators. Hello Health now boasts a 50% drop in traditional overhead cost. Many insurance companies have also begun increasing coverage for virtual visits with doctors because they are markedly less expensive than traditional visits. Saving time, money, and taking care of your health. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.